Blog Talk Radio.
Dad, are you gonna
be
on
the
mat?
Okay, then I.
Rockies, welcome to a special Wednesday night edition, March Madness edition of Assembly Call. I'm Kurt Crawley here, and along with me is Ari Kaufman. Ari, how are you tonight?
Good. I really enjoyed your Lee Hacksaw Hamilton impression, impersonation to begin the show. Brings back fond memories of my days in San Diego.
Hey, Inland Empire, North County, Orange County.
Oceanside, Escondido, Anaheim, La Mirada, Pomona, Oceanside. I'll name them all.
Is there still a payphone in La Mesa? Or did that go in the 5 points earlier this week? Well, anyways, we have a huge show tonight. We are going to go through the projected seedings. There are literally hundreds of mock brackets out there. It's almost become as much as the process as filling out the brackets themselves is figuring out who is going to be seeded where. And I think we know for sure that the Liberty Flames will be in one of the play-in games, and we know for sure that the almighty Duke Blue Devils will be the number one overall seed.
Whoa.
I think we got two of those 68 in. Without much. But
are you confirming Duke is the number one overall seed even if they lose Friday or Saturday or Sunday in the almighty ACC tournament?
Do they even have to show up? Do they even have to show up at the ACC tournament?
I just have to wonder, when was the last time a team that didn't even win their own conference and a pretty subpar conference became a number one seed, much less number one overall seed? It really defies logic, the bias toward Duke this year. But, you know, I'm sure we'll speak of that, and I've written about it, and people have commented on it, and, you know, I don't buy it. I would not even have them as a one seed, but that gets to be tiresome talking about it. I'm looking forward to not talking about it much after Sunday.
Well, I mean, the only question I have, Ari, is it's actually, there's no clear-cut number one. It's like Duke's like the default choice. I think Indiana did cement the number one seed regardless of what happens in the Big Ten tournament. So that's one. I think there's I think Gonzaga, they've already won their conference title, and yes, they're in a quote mid-major, and you said before that the West Coast Conference is a little down this year, but they're still a number one seed. And
yes,
the other one, Louisville, possibly Georgetown, possibly. You could go with the 1 and 2 seeds. If I was filling out a bracket, it's definitely not going to go out shock this year. You're not going to see all four number ones. I would say it'd be 1 or 2 at the most. I don't see Duke making it to the Final Four. Indiana, I'm a little higher on. I might go with the Hoosiers kind of as my default conservative championship pick. The thing about Gonzaga, and It's actually been 15 years that they've been on top. I remember, I think it was the 99 tournament. They had Minnesota the first round, and if I'm trying to remember, it was Clem Haskins still the coach there, but they had several players kicked off the team for academic reasons. There was some sort of scandal, and Gonzaga got there. I don't know if they made it Elite Eight that year, but they've been a pretty solid regular for the last 15 years, and the one thing that the Zags have not done is make the Final Four. That's, you know, like Butler did 2 years in a row. We have yet to see that out of Gonzaga. And if, after that, I don't know who the other number one will be, but we're going to go through the Andy Bottoms bracket. I need a mute button on here, but anyways, here's how Andy has it, and we can make a comment as we go through, and this may or may not be how it all shakes down come Sunday night. Indiana's listed as the number one seed, and this bracket has them playing the play-in winner between Liberty and Norfolk State, and you may remember Norfolk State from last year as a 15. I'm trying to, was Lehigh who beat Duke? Who beat Norfolk? Who did Norfolk State beat?
They beat Missouri.
Okay. You know, when you see a number 15 beat a 2, it's usually a number 2 who is not a perennial powerhouse. I think Iowa State was the number 2 1 year and lost to Hampton Institute. That's what I remember. I also remember South Carolina 1 year was the number 2 and lost to a 15. I think they lost to a MEAC team as well. So when it happens, it usually is a team that's usually not a program that's not used to a high seed. Duke was an exception. You usually don't see the Blue Bloods seed at number 2 going down to a 15. And the other thing is, I think we've been past the 64-team format now since 85. So it would be 28 years, if my math is correct. The 16 seed is 0-112. And I'm waiting for the year for it to happen. It actually happened once on the women's side, which is actually more impressive. I think it was an Ivy League school won at Stanford, and the top seeds actually get to host in their own gym. So it's happened on the women's side, and I think it's going to happen one of these years on the men's side. I don't know if it'll be this year or down the road, but I think because there are actually six number 16 seeds now, a couple of them are, in effect, 15 seeds. But anyways, I have we have the Indiana, Liberty, Norfolk State, and then on the other, the 8-9 would be Memphis and California. Any opinion on those two? You don't hear about Memphis too much now because they're going to the Big East. They're still in Conference USA, right?
Yeah, Memphis was undefeated in Conference USA, and, you know, that league is down a little bit from where it was in its heyday 10, 12 years ago, but any team to go undefeated in any league is impressive, and certainly Conference USA, which I think in most RPIs is around 10, 11, 12, it's as good as the West Coast Conference, so in many ways what Memphis did in their conference is just as impressive as what Gonzaga did. They don't have a team like St. Mary's that they had to beat 3 times. But on the other hand, there's a lot more travel in that league. And, you know, outside of St. Mary's in the West Coast Conference, it's a pretty weak league. So Memphis to go undefeated, you know, with their young coach, Josh Pafner, is pretty impressive. I don't think they beat anybody out of conference that impresses anyone. That's the problem. I happen to just pull up their schedule, so I'm not doing this by heart. But their only difficult non-conference games, they lost all of them. VCU, Minnesota, Louisville, and Xavier. So that's why they're getting an 8 seed. Otherwise, you think about it, why would they not be getting a 2, 3, 4, 5 seed? And if that is the matchup, you know, it's hard to say. Cal's been pretty good lately, and the Pac-10 is not as bad as last year. So, you know, it's hard to pick these games. That's certainly an intriguing matchup between Memphis and California. And if Indiana is the one seed in that particular region, you know, starting in round two these days, you have your hands full. It doesn't matter. You know, they're usually the 1-16 game and 2-15, you know, for the most part. You're gonna pencil in the ones and twos. Though I suppose this year could be one of those years where, you know, if you really want to dream and believe a one seed's going to lose, when you've got 11 to 13 teams that really have a legitimate claim as a one seed, you know, maybe one of them does fall this year if the matchup doesn't work out for them. But come round two, all bets are off. I think ones and twos are, you know, doesn't surprise me at all if they lose in the second round because yep. The talent level is getting closer between these big boys and the so-called mid-majors.
No, I agree. When I fill out my brackets, I don't pick too many of the 13 through 16 to win. But when we get to what they call the third round now, which I'm just going to call the round of 32, there's no gimmies anywhere. Moving on, Andy Bottoms has St. Louis, 24-6, going against Belmont. And I know you're very high on the Billikens, and some people feel that they're a top four seed, and the coach is very familiar with that conference, who had to step in for the late Rick Majerus before the season, has had a very, very strong run as the coach of the year candidate.
Yeah, Atlantic 10 is very good. I don't know how many teams Andy or Joe Lenardi or whomever have. It's five or six usually, which is certainly a lot. I think that'd be if they got six in, I think they'll have more teams than any conference, but probably the Big East and Big Ten. So good conference. Jim Crews had done a great job there. And they were good last year. They were picked for second in the league. So he exceeded expectations by finishing first, but the cover wasn't dry at the end. You know, 24 wins. And closing strong. So St. Louis, and where does Andy have them? As a five or a six, you're saying?
He has them as a five.
That's probably reasonable. But
Belmont is now in the Ohio Valley Conference.
Yeah, so and they're good.
That's never a gimme. They beat Murray State and Murray State's usually there as well. They're as a 12-1.
Or Morehead State in years past when Kenneth Reed is now in the NBA and they upset, was it Louisville, I believe? And I don't like, you know, as a guy who supports, and I don't like calling them mid-majors, but let's just call them mid-majors for tonight. The guy who supports the mid-majors, the committee, whether intentionally or not, tends to put a lot of mid-majors against each other in round one, especially in a 6-11, 7-10, 5-12 type game. And it's unfortunate because that means one of them is going to go home. And I think, you know, more often than not, some of those mid-majors have a pretty darn good chance of beating a, you know, fifth-place or fourth-place Big East or Big 12 team, but yet they got to go up against each other like Wichita State played VCU last year in the first round. Two very good teams. And, you know, Wichita State lost by a couple points in the end, and there went that part of the season.
Okay, and then on Andy's projection, he has the St. Louis Belmont winner playing the winner between number four Marquette and Akron. And no one here in Milwaukee calls them the Golden Eagles. They're so called the Warriors here.
Nice.
But if Marquette makes it to the round of 32, Marquette and St. Louis used to see themselves a lot in the old Conference USA, and I think they were in the Great Midwest Conference as well. That's when Charlie Spoonauer was down there. So that would be a nice matchup if it were to come to as a 4-5 matchup. Moving on, and I know you're a huge Bugs Williams fan, and we're John Thompson III did win Big East Coach of the Year, but in accepting the award, he even conceded that Bugs Williams was just as worthy as winning Conference Coach of the Year.
That's nice of him to say because he did a great job as well, John Thompson. They were not picked to be that good this year, and I know Marquette wasn't, so both of them did an exceptional job when you compare it to the inferior job that you know who up in upstate New York did with his team this year.
I am so glad you mentioned that. Here is the Syracuse resume from the last 10 years.
Yes, please.
2003, 2004, 11-5 in conference, Sweet 16.
Okay.
05, 11-5 in conference, NCAA first round, one and done. 06, 7-9 in conference, one and done, first round. And it really gets good. 2007, 24-11, and they made the Elite Eight of the NIT.
Right.
2008, they were right back in the NIT. They made the Elite Eight again. You know, you get those couple extra home games at the Carrier Dome. And, no pass fans there. They'll fill up 25,000 for an NIT game. I mean, they will do that. 2009, 11-7 in conference, Sweet 16. 2010, they did go fit. And, in fact, you know who won Coach of the Year? 15-3 in conference, regular season champs. I crashed out in the Sweet 16. 2010, 12-6 in conference, went down in the round of 32. And last year, 34-3, 17-1. Were they a number one overall seed last year? But
they were number one seed. I don't know if they were number one overall. They were definitely the one seed, and they lost to Ohio State, as I recall, in the Elite Eight.
So, in 2003, they didn't win at all. But last 10 years, I mean, or 2 years, they didn't even make the dance.
Yeah, 10 years
to
probably
one and done.
10 years, and I didn't write that down. But 10 years, 8 tournaments, which is bad because 64 to 68
right.
teams get in. You should make it every year, just like most top programs, like Duke and Kansas and others do. And you're telling me nothing better than the Sweet 16 until last year. So 9 years of what I would call failure to not even get past the Sweet 16. And last year, as a one seed, you're probably supposed to make the Final Four, but I'll give them credit for getting to the Final Eight and losing a close game to the two seed Ohio State, who lost in the Final Four. But, and this year they're going nowhere unless they get really hot. I believe they won today after being down double digits in the first half to the venerable Seton Hall Pirates, who are one of the worst teams in the Big East. And I read the recap, actually, and the whole article focuses on Jim Boeheim and how he loved Madison Square Garden and how his team has played there so many times. He's been coming there for 50 years and has never left the state of New York in his life. I think that should have been included. And, of course, they mentioned in the end that Syracuse won, but they don't mention that the game was tied at half and Seton Hall led, and Syracuse is going to have a tough time winning their next game in the tournament. I believe it's against Pitt. So, yeah, Jim Boeheim, smug, cocky, and an overrated coach. No doubt about that.
What was absolutely hilarious was when he went off on the media here in Milwaukee after they lost to Marquette. It was a tough loss. I mean, it wasn't a horrible loss, but I guess the reporter asked questions that whether certain players should have messed up on one of Marquette players, and he went to the "I've been doing this for 37 years" line. Do you want to coach this team? And then any told me, I don't know if this was directed towards student reporters, Syracuse people, Marquette people, but he got off go win a Pulitzer Prize somewhere else. So it's they're on Milwaukee radio. They were just all over him, and they said, "Good luck dealing with the media and the ACC." So, but anyways, getting to the bottom half of our first bracket, and you follow Wichita State a lot. They have Andy has them as an 11 against UNLV, and that's one of those 6-11 games that you're talking about where it's two teams from, quote, non-BCS conferences. And Andy has the winner of that play, what would be third seed at Florida against, and they should be playing or getting ready to play as we speak, South Dakota State, if they win the Summit League conference title game. I believe they play North Dakota State. So I got someone on the Midwest sports fans table who's got a dog in the fight in that one. So, and then there's number 7, Notre Dame, and all the Mike Gray fans going to come out. And they're going to play, according to this bracket, number 10, Minnesota. Somebody's got to win that game. I know.
If you don't mind, let me just comment on a couple of those things you mentioned. UNLV, Wichita State, you know, UNLV, Mountain West is very good, but a 6 seed seems a little bit high, and Wichita State an 11 might be a little low. They did lose to Creighton in the MVC title game, but that game is a total toss-up. Wichita State, not as good as last year, but played over their heads. Be interesting to see. South Dakota State won last night. They won in Sioux Falls in the Summit League final, so they're in. They beat their neighbors of the North in North Dakota State. And,
Bummer for Durlane, but I think he's actually UND Fighting Sioux fan or whatever they ever change their handle to. They're still going to be the Fighting
Sioux. He's North Dakota State. North Dakota State, I believe, the bigger school in Fargo, which is actually North Dakota State. So no dog in the fight for him there. And obviously Florida, you know, was talked as a one seed for a while. It faded a little bit. I don't see them having too much trouble with the Jackrabbits. In Notre Dame, Minnesota sounds like the most boring game in the last 10 years in the NCAA tournament to me. I don't know who's going to win, and I really don't have any interest in that game.
Will Minnesota make – they got to make a showing in the Big Ten.
Minnesota is not in the tournament, in my opinion, at this point. They're under 500 in the Big Ten. They were awful the last two games at Purdue and somewhere else. My brain's not working, but I wrote the article on Tubby Smith, who I think is really on the hot seat. And yeah, I don't think Minnesota's in the tournament unless they win at least a game in the Big Ten, depending upon how the committee weighs the tournament, which is often inconsistent.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at another mock here that also has the Gophers as a 10. They're 1-7 on the road in conference. So and the bottom half of that bracket is the Hurricanes against Vermont. So we'll see if, you know, they were impressive. They demolished Duke and North Carolina at home this year and even showed off a little bit in the process. But I really don't like the teams that are not the traditional blue bloods that are ranked high. I think they're in for – I don't think they'll lose to Vermont, but – and actually, they should make the Sweet 16. I would pick them over Notre Dame.
If that's their bracket, they've got a nice draw if that's their bracket. But I don't see them going much farther than the Sweet 16 because I don't think they've closed very well the last month, and I think they've shown that they're not one of the top 10 teams in college basketball like they – were ranked for much of the season when they got hot. The Duke win carried them a long way, and that was Duke without Ryan Kelly, and that was down in Miami with a big crowd. And other than that, they beat North Carolina. North Carolina's not that great this year. Miami doesn't excite me too much. I mean, they're a nice story, and Larry Nick has got a good job, but I don't see them going very far.
What some people might not know is for a time in the 80s, and this is – I mean, there are a lot of basketball schools that don't have a football program – but Miami didn't have a basketball program.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they were big in football at the time. I think part of it was they were an independent in football, and they weren't up to joining a conference at that point in basketball. So that was kind of unique. It was like a 5-6 year period. Miami didn't have a basketball program. But going on to the second quadrant, and Andy has this as the East bracket for what it's worth, but he has Duke playing the winner. Actually, not a playing winner, but Duke would be playing Florida International. Any chance FIU could be the team?
Well, I'm not sure if you're looking at the most updated one because that should be Western Kentucky. They beat FIU on Monday night.
You are right. You know. Okay, Western Kentucky. You think that's a gimme?
Yeah, Western Kentucky wasn't that good this year. They actually had 15 losses, and this is not your Courtney Lee, you know, Western Kentucky team that used to get to the second or third round occasionally. So, when you're a one seed, you're supposed to play one of the four, you know, worst teams that's in. So I don't see Duke or whoever is Western Kentucky having much trouble.
Okay. And on my, I'm trying to get the current one up. I have Illinois Oregon as the number as the 8-9 game.
Yeah, that's correct. Yep, that's what he has.
Okay. And then after that, he has an actually, this would be, he has Pittsburgh as a 5, and they would be playing a play-in winner. He has LaSalle and Tennessee as one of the first 4 games. So
it's interesting. Interesting. Some of the playing games in the past have been kind of blah. But, you know, a game like that with a LaSalle team that hasn't been in the tournament in quite a while and a Tennessee team who probably needs to win at least a game or two in the SEC tournament to get into the play-in game because they're really, you know, they got 11 losses. They're, you know, not – SEC's not that great. That'll be an interesting game to see who wins if they do play. And then against Pitt, you know, I think both of those teams give Pitt a good game.
I know you gave Jamie Dixon high mark. This year, but the years previously where Pitt has been actually thought of a little higher, they haven't gotten deep into the tournament. So I really don't know, you know, but, you know, previous results doesn't indicate what might happen this time around. The other part of that bracket, number 4, Kansas State against 13, Davidson, not to be confused with the Seth Curry Davidson teams of recent years. And I did a piece on Bruce Weber, who went to my old high school in Milwaukee. And and after, obviously, he took Illinois to the national championship game, and that was in 05. And after that, he went 61-61 in conference. And it's a what have you done for me lately business. And Bruce got shown the door in Illinois. It wasn't a popular firing in many regards among Illinois fans, but you know, it's mostly Frank Martin's recruits, but he, you know, he has a vastly different style than Frank Martin, but he's gotten it done. And hard to believe, it's the first time they even had a share of the conference championship since 1977, they lost to Marquette in the Sweet 16 last second that year. So K-State's never been to a Final Four, so I did not expect them to go too deep. I think they've overachieved, but we'll see. If they're a 4 seed, and depending on what 5 seed they play, I know I wouldn't rule them out against a 1 seed in the round of 16. Moving on, we've got, you have anything to add to that?
No, I think Bruce Weber's done a great job. I think the article you wrote was great about it. I included him in my list. They won the most conference games they won in more than 40 years. He was right there with Kansas all year. He lost to them twice. Otherwise, heck, he would have won the conference.
So yeah, the only blow they couldn't beat that's not because they didn't beat the big boys.
No, but they lost. Pretty much all their losses were good losses. Oklahoma State, Gonzaga, Michigan, Kansas. So we'll see. They've overachieved. We'll see what happens.
That was winnable. Moving on, number 6 UCLA against number 11 Iowa State. You know, are the Bruins a team that can turn it on if you're looking for someone a little farther down to make a run? You know, Shabazz, you know, maybe one and done, but that's a good that's a good possibility if they're seeded that low. And number 3, New Mexico against number 14, Montana. Any thoughts on those two games? And I'll add something.
UCLA can't turn it on. They've got a lot of talent. They're young. They don't have a great coach. And you know, Ben Howland, you know, has a lot of talent every year, and he had a couple of good years. Kevin Love, Russell Westbrook, and those teams. But no, I don't think they'll. I think that if they play Iowa State, that's a total toss-up. And the next round against New Mexico, who I think will win, would be very interesting. And New Mexico, I thought if they had not lost Saturday night to Air Force, certainly was in the running for a 1 seed, considering they would have been 27-4 and won what's ranked as the first or second, you know, number 1 or 2, depending on the RPI, conference in America not getting the national exposure because they're in Albuquerque. But if they win the Mountain West tournament, which means they'll have at least two more really good wins, I think they should be a two seed. I think it's a crime if they're not a two seed, considering they'll be 29-5 and they had a lot of good non-conference wins. But I don't expect them to be a two seed because you've got people.
The other thing that's sad about that conference, I mean, it's definitely one of the top five conferences in America this year. But the Mountain West, I forget about the CBS Sports Network. You know, I usually got it glued in with ESPN or something, and I realized, wait a minute, who's in the Mountain West game? And it's either on CBS Sports Network or the NBC Sports Network, and I kind of wrote off the conference a few years back when BYU and Utah were leaving it, so that's going to be a huge play. So you can't, from a basketball standpoint, Boise State is not going to compare with those two. While BYU's been down a little bit, and
Boise State's been pretty good.
Yeah.
Colorado State's been good.
I mean, what's happened to Utah since they joined the Pac? Is Chris Toliak still coaching them?
The Utah Utes?
Yes.
I don't know. They haven't been, frankly, that relevant in about a decade. They haven't been very good.
They're still relevant until they moved to the Pac-10, and at least from a basketball, actually, football's gone down, too. You know, they wanted to play with the big boys for all these years, and so far in the two big revenue sports, men's basketball and football, Utah hasn't done it, but at least, you know, it's
no,
difficult. They could turn around.
Krzyzewiak is still the coach. He's also 18-43 in 2 years. So I don't think he's going to – I don't know his contract situation, but he's been really had a rough couple of years there, and they haven't made the tournament in 5 years. So that's unfortunate for them. It's a good basketball city.
Yeah, no, I mean, Krzyzewiak, he played in the pros here in Milwaukee for several years. You know, so I kind of hate the – and he coached the Bucks for a while, if I'm not mistaken. But it's kind of, you know, I think sometimes the problems with certain schools sometimes gets above the program, and maybe with the athletic department, there's some silly scandal out there involving a swim coach at Utah. So that's, I know it's a little off topic. Utah's not in the tournament, but going to the 7-10 and the 2-15, you're the Creighton guy. What do you think about the Blue Jays at number 7, potentially playing Cincinnati as a number 10?
Well, I have no complaints about the 7 seed. In fact, Creighton was down to like a 9 or a 10 in some polls, in projections, until they finished strong with 5-foot wins. I love the matchup against Cincinnati, who probably shouldn't be in the tournament, and I know they won today, but if they lose their next game in the tournament against Georgetown, I don't know that they'll be in, but I love that matchup. I see that as a Creighton victory. And if they can't beat, you know, the 7th or 8th best, 9th best team, whatever, in the Big East, that doesn't bode very well. Just like when they played Alabama in the first round last year and they won, you know, I figured you've got to be able to beat the 5th best team in the SEC. So I would love that matchup, and I hope it's in Kansas City, because if it is, I'll probably find a way to get there and watch it in person.
Are you in Omaha tonight, or are you out on the road?
I'm home in Lincoln tonight. It's a rarity. I'll be in Chicago next week, and what I'm planning is maybe to drive through Kansas City on my way home and catch a game on Friday. So we'll see what the brackets look like for next Friday in Kansas City, or Sunday, or next Sunday.
I know Milwaukee and San Diego are on the docket for second, third round games in 14, and I actually got some last-second tickets the last time. I think it was after the 2010 season. So I'm kind of hoping to get the whole package next year. The other half of that bracket will be Michigan State as a 2 against the Florida Gulf Coast team, which you have reminded me several times, beat the University of Miami this year.
I'm glad you pay attention to what I say, because I don't think a lot of people always do, but thank you. It did be Miami, and they haven't had a basketball program for very long. I think they wound up finishing second in their conference, but they won the tournament. And, no, I don't see them beating Michigan State, but it's nice that they're in the tournament, and congratulations to them.
It's usually an NCAA law that one of the tourney sites for the first weekend is in the state of North Carolina, just so Duke can travel 30 miles. And
But not this year, right?
Yeah. Yeah, the closest they could get is Philadelphia. So,
well, there's a lot of Duke alums in Philadelphia, including Brian Dilsheimer, who has written for our site in the past. Duke plays at Temple quite often, and it'll be a home game for Duke if they're in Philadelphia, no matter who they play.
Yeah. At least they'll have to step on an airplane. You know, it's not a de facto.
They'll have to step on one. They will. They will. Yeah, there you go.
And getting to the South, what would be the South Regional, Andy would have, he has Louisville as the one seed playing the play-in winner between LIU Brooklyn or Southern. And the winner of that game, we'll assume it's Louisville, would play the winner of San Diego State and North Carolina State. And I know you're down on the Wolfpack. They were figured to finish much better this year. I don't know. There was one game with San Diego State where I did catch where they were very impressive, where they blew out someone. I'm trying to think who they may have played, but I don't like your chances against an ACC team. And you're probably going to disagree with me on that.
Well, both those are two of the most disappointing teams in basketball this year. Both many people pick North Carolina State to not only win the ACC, but they were ranked third, I believe, nationally in many preseason polls, and San Diego State was picked to win the very good Mountain West, and they finished tied for fourth, perhaps. So, toss-up game. I can see North Carolina State winning, and of course, the winner of that game probably doesn't have much of a chance against Louisville, who has finally hit their stride after kind of being humbled after they hit that number one ranking in America a few months ago, and now they're made all the way back to where they're considered a one seed. So I think Louisville will cruise to the Sweet 16.
Okay.
If the brackets go like this, of course.
The other half of that bracket, if it turned out this way, on a Wisconsin standpoint, this would be great. Andy has Wisconsin as a 5 playing Louisiana Tech, who waltzed through whatever is left of the Western Athletic Conference as a 12. And the winner of that one would get Arizona, number 4 seed Arizona, against Whitby, number 13 seed Bucknell. Now, if I want to go with a 13 seed, and they've done it before, I would go with Bucknell against Arizona, who was great in December, but, you know, since conference play, they've been in the mix, but no, I think they're ripe to be I think it's a team that's going to get eliminated early. Agree or disagree?
I agree. Arizona got a lot of fluke wins early in the year, a lot of times against inferior teams in Tucson, like Colorado and Utah. And even when they beat Florida, who's a very good team, they should have lost that game. I have no confidence in Arizona. They didn't win the Pac-10, and they don't impress me, at least not in the last few months. And if they play Wisconsin, I got a little bias toward the Big Ten, but I could see Wisconsin beating them. And, Louisiana Tech and Bucknell both have a shot to beat those teams, as far as I know. But as long as Wisconsin plays their game, they shouldn't lose to Louisiana Tech. And Arizona probably should beat Bucknell, but it does have that upset feel to it just because of Bucknell, what they've done in the past. And, frankly, Arizona's lost a lot of early games in the past.
Yeah. And the other half of that, checking out the other half, we've got Butler as a 6 playing what would be a play-in winner against Kentucky and St. Mary's.
That's got to be the worst thing I could ever see as a Butler fan.
You want to see Butler, Kentucky, don't you?
No, this is like you have a pretty good year. You exceed expectations to some degree. You get a 6 seed. And you're up against two teams who I think are every bit as good as Butler. Obviously we have no idea that's how it will turn out. But if Kentucky and St. Mary's do play in a play-in game, very interesting game, and whoever has to play that team is really unfortunate. Whatever 6 seed or 5 seed does, Yeah, I mean, St. Mary's should be in. They shouldn't be in a play-in game. Kentucky probably should be in a play-in game and maybe even shouldn't be in that position, but we'll see what happens. But, yeah, that's brutal. That's brutal for Butler to have to play a team like Kentucky, who everyone knows, if they play their game, can probably beat most teams. And a St. Mary's team that's 27-6 and, you know, beat Creighton pretty easily and is a pretty strong school. So that's
that,
really
that would be the early Saturday game where it's the only game in that time slot, the one that they usually put Duke in or Kentucky when you're where they're a one seed. It's like, you will watch Duke, you will like Duke. There are no other games on.
that's exactly right. The Saturday noon Easter start where they force
right.
you to watch Duke,
right.
Kentucky, Georgetown, whoever it might be, whatever team they want you to watch, you will watch that, and you will sit there for 2 hours waiting for the rest of the games to start. Yeah.
Yeah. That's like
good day to go do laundry or grocery shopping.
That's when the errands get done. And then when we have four games on four different networks, and that's a great thing the last couple of years. And I didn't mind it before because they wrapped around and always managed to get to the best finishes, but now every game is in its entirety, and yes, only one quarter of them are going to be on CBS, but you know, if you have cable, you have TNT and CBS and Two TV, you can pick your favorite right to the end. Even if it's a 30-point blowout, you don't have to worry about them pulling the plug on the game. Going back to the bracket, our brackets, number 3, Michigan against 14, Falco. And you know what the Michigan assistant did. You knew what he did. He wrecked the Indiana. He helped wreck the Indiana program. He has learned from his in-laws. Tom Crean has learned from his in-laws. You got to say that. So you follow the Horizon League. Falco doesn't have to get through Butler anymore, but think they can be competitive.
Yeah, I think they can. Valpo's always got a veteran-laden team, a lot of foreign players, very well coached. Obviously, a very good record. But with Butler not in the Horizon League, they finally got in the tournament. I think they hadn't been there since 2004. Michigan is very, very good, and frankly, they could be a two seed, and might be a two seed if they do well in the Big Ten tourney. And this game may never occur, but that'd be a tricky game for Michigan. Their main benefit being that, as far as I can see, that game's in Auburn Hills. So even though Valpo's not that far from the Detroit area, it's going to be a partisan Michigan crowd, which, if it is a close game, would probably carry them through. But that's a tough matchup for Michigan if they happen to play Valpo.
Okay, and then finally, the final half, I know you'll love this seed. North Carolina's up to a number 7. That's probably where they'll be, now, depending on the ACC tournament. They would play number 10, Villanova, and number 2, Kansas, would be playing 15 Long Beach State, and number 2 Kansas and 7 North Carolina. That could be the noon game on Sunday.
Yeah, that'll be a rematch of last year's Elite Eight and the Final Four of about 4 years ago. Carolina's a 7. I'm not going to complain. You would certainly
right.
be about, you know, being 19 in the RPI. They might get a 4. I mean,
I wouldn't be surprised if they're high. No, I agree. And I wouldn't sleep on the Tar Heels either. If you remember.
No, not at all. Not at all.
If you remember 2000, North Carolina was either an 8 or a 9, and Wisconsin was an 8, and they both made the Final Four and wound up with a 1. Michigan State is a number 1 who won the tournament, and a 5 and a couple 8s, if I remember it right. So even in a down year, don't sleep on North Carolina. I'm looking. Switchboard here. It's, I don't know if we have any callers on the line, but if anyone wants to chime in, area code 646-716-360.
Yeah, especially call in if you're from Yorba Linda, Corona,
yeah,
El Centro, La Jolla, Del Mar, Rancho Bernardo, Rancho Penasquito.
Yes, I want all 10 of these phone lines flat.
Waiver wire is coming in, yeah.
We've got a major trade in the NHL. the Toronto Maple Leafs are making a major move tonight.
Yeah, well, that was all pre-internet. You know, he was like the internet before there was the internet for sports news. I mean, he had his connections or his cables or his waiver wire or whatever it was.
But it was something that happened 24 hours earlier, and he'll come on, he'll get away with announcing it as quote breaking news. That's the laugh I got out of it.
Well, I'll tell you what. Speaking of Southern California, Long Beach State is going to get annihilated by Kansas in Kansas City. That might be the most lopsided game in the first round, because they're not very good, Long Beach State, and Kansas is very good, and they're playing at home. So the North Carolina Villanova winner will have their hands full with Kansas with the home crowd too. That really sets up nicely for the Jayhawks to certainly make it into the Sweet 16.
You know, it wasn't Long Beach, I think it was Santa Barbara, but they played Ohio State and Milwaukee a few years back, and I remember getting my camera on, and I was in the concourse after the game, and here are the Santa Barbara cheerleaders at the at one of the, you know, where they sell the hats or the T-shirts or whatever, and I got a good picture of the back side. That was great. That was worth the price of admission there. You know, it's always nice to say, I love seeing those schools, your Big West schools and some of the smaller conferences, and, you know, they may not win, but, you know, they bring enthusiasm, and you know, that's what makes the tournament as it is. And you see the Buffalo Wild Wings commercial where they joke about the 256-team tournament and the Fighting Snails. Well, it kind of is that way with the conference tournament, and look at Liberty, who have made it as the best team in that conference in the Big South in the past, but that was kind of their round of 256 last weekend, and now they're kind of in the round of 128. But moving on to the last regional, Gonzaga, Andy has the one seed, and they will be playing how the mighty have fallen. James Madison is the 16.
James Madison, you know, he, as I recall, he was only about 5'4", smallest president. So he's going to have a really tough time going up against Gonzaga's front line out there in Salt Lake City. So I'm gonna pick the Zags.
There we go. Yeah. And then we have Missouri at number 8. I've seen Missouri a couple times. Paul Pressey's kid. He's a chip off the old block. He plays for the Tigers. They would be playing number 9 seed Temple. And then kind of going quickly through it, number 5, Syracuse against 12, Boise State. And there was a key injury with Boise. Or maybe I was thinking of Montana. But
Boise's good. Kurt, Boise, yeah. Boise is a good team. They have a great point guard. They won at Creighton. They've got a Syracuse, Boise State. I mean, you know, obviously my bias will be to pick Boise State, but, gee, I would love to see Syracuse have to play Boise State in the first round because they'll have their hands full. And I don't know how Syracuse is going to be a 5 seed.
And
they lose.
That's how, when I thought the Mountain West was going to take a hit, they said Boise State, they're never there in basket and hoops. Great part. It's
no, but they're good this year,
21
wins.
Yes, you never know. You never
I don't know how Missouri's an
8
seed, by the way. Missouri has no business being an 8 seed.
Where would
you know, they finished sixth in the SEC, 11-7. They're going to have 10 losses if they lose in the NCAA tournament. They should be on the bubble. They should not be an 8 seed.
Well, I think, remember, 14 teams in the SEC now, if they get a 10, rack up 2-3 wins. That's the thing, some of these conferences have gotten so large that you can rack up a couple, and the Big East, which, according to Dan Wetzel, is the one conference tournament that remains special. They kind of have the step ladder format, and I think UConn won 5 nights in a row.
Yeah, they did. UConn won the championship that year, by the way.
Yes,
don't
exactly.
forget.
Exactly.
So,
you know, I thought it was maybe burned out. I didn't put them in my brackets then yet. Yes, I was obviously wrong. Number 4, Oklahoma State, and number 13, Stephen F. Austin. I think we should say something about Marcus Smart of OSU. How someone explained it to me is he may not have the best path in stat line in college basketball, but he, if there was a wins above replacement, you know, the category they use in baseball, the statisticians, Marcus Smart would be that. He turned around the momentum of the K-State game, taking a charge. So what do you think of Marcus? How much of a look have you gotten on him?
He's great. He's a freshman, as I recall, and he's the guy who did the backflips when they won in Lawrence. By the way, I mean, Oklahoma State, they won in Lawrence. That pretty much tells you how good they can be. They won a big game against Kansas State down in Stillwater to finish third in the conference, only a game back of Kansas and Kansas State. He's very good. He plays out of control occasionally, but they'll go in some ways as far as he and the other guard, who's got a similar name, I think it's Brown, will take them. They both average 15, 16 a game. And there's LeBron Nash, who also is up there. It's a very talented team, very well coached. Travis Ford was one of my candidates for Coach of the Year. Stephen F. Austin State has a very good record, but that's going to be a tough matchup for them. And, you know, if Oklahoma State, if Syracuse gets by Boise, they're not beating Oklahoma State. I would be kind of like when Syracuse lost to Texas A&M years ago.
That would not be a good draw. And Boeheim would have to explain how his team went down in the round of 32.
That game's in San Jose. I mean, Jim's never been west of the Appalachians, much less west of the Rockies. I mean, he's not going to – he'll think he's in Guam or something. You know, it's going to be tough for him.
Oh, come on. They've had to play in the Maori Classic once or twice.
Yeah, that's true.
They've taken a paycheck for that.
When you go that far away, it's like, you know, they don't even it's not really like being in a road game.
Well, they played the Aztecs this year. They went out to San Diego. That was the one.
Oh, yeah, they did. They were on the USF Midway, right?
Right. Hopefully they get there figuring out what happened with the floor. You know, so they say that they have a solution for it, that they won't do up next time. So, you know, I was sad to see the Marquette, Ohio State was scheduled to play in one of those, and they were about to chip it off, and they realized they couldn't do it. And Florida and
imagine if that game got played. Just think about whoever won that game, they might have gotten one seed higher in the NCAA tournament because that would be such a quality win. It kind of changes things.
Right. Yes, I know. It was a game I wanted to see played, but, you know, unfortunately, you know, I can't go back on that now. Going to the final half of the last bracket, Shaka Smart, number 6 seed, VCU against the number 11 seed, Colorado. That would be about where the Buffs were last year. I imagine you would have VCU winning that game. And Ohio State, and they just got their ass kicked at Wisconsin a few weeks ago. But they, you know, sometimes it's good to go with a team that has been down because you never know, they can rebound without notice. I did my little football preseason predictions. I had the Baltimore Ravens winning the Super Bowl. But I decided to keep with the prediction before the playoffs. And you know how that went. Nobody thought the Ravens had a chance. But sometimes you just, if you're filling out a bracket, go with someone that is not necessarily riding a wave of momentum. It's kind of like a good rule of thumb. You know, fill out 20 of them, just use different strategies on each. But anyways, VCU, Colorado, and Ohio State, Harvard, I'm not expecting any resistance from the Harvard Crimson on that one. Kind of, say for an Ivy League champions, kind of a weak year for that conference. And finally, Colorado State and Oklahoma's back in the show this year how long was when was Blake there? 2009?
Yeah, I got it in my Lon Kruger first tourney appearance in 2009. Yeah, I have that in my Coach of the Year honorable mention. Did a really good job there. 10 seeds probably about right. And but you know, against Colorado State, who's a good team, that's definitely a toss up, especially in Philadelphia, where neither team's going to have a decided advantage. And by the way, the way Andy has it, Ohio State in Dayton would be a major coup for them. But, of course, you know, you never know. Ohio State very well could get a two-seed. In fact, I think they're very close to getting a two-seed right now. So you always wonder these unintended consequences. If Ohio State earns a two-seed and they wind up being shipped off somewhere else rather than getting a three and playing, you know, 70 miles home.
They usually get the top seeds close to home. And I'm glad they threw Dayton a nugget besides hosting the, quote, why is Dayton the capital of the, quote, opening round game or the first four? Like, what does Dayton do to deserve that every single year?
I don't know. They have good basketball fans there. There's a lot of schools. There's about five schools in the Cincinnati-Dayton area.
It's a centralized location. But, when filling out the brackets, you'll see Ohio State will go to Dayton, Michigan will go to the Auburn Hills. It has a good chance of happening. They don't do the favors as much with the lower seeded teams. You won't see, Kentucky. Louisville will be in the Lexington bracket. So, that'll probably happen. Obviously, a team can't play on its home court, so you would not see UK there. Final matchup of the last bracket would be number 2 Georgetown against Iona. So it'll never be a pretty favorable draw for the Hoyas. Colorado State's underrated. That could be tricky on second thought.
Very tricky, but you know, Georgetown's almost a one seed. In fact, right now I think they in Kansas have a good.
Who coaches CSU these days?
Oh gosh, Larry Stacy. Larry Stacy
from Iowa State fame. I mean, give him credit for resurrecting his.
Yeah, he's on my list.
Iowa
sure.
State, 2000, and it was an embarrassing incident. You know, kind of. Made up a punchline for a while. If you remember football coach for Washington State, Mike Price, who made the awful mistake of taking the Alabama job, and there was some silly incident there, and he basically got his – in fact, the ink was even dry on the contract, and they just let him go, and he wound up rebounding at Texas El Paso, which for him was a good fit. Alabama.
Yeah, this is all very fluid. I mean, Colorado State, I just noticed they won in their first round Mountain West game today, and they'll play UNLV, who also won. So just consider whatever team wins that game, you know, might have a seed because of that. Colorado State and UNLV are seeded similarly. And so what Andy has here, he's done a great job all year updating this every week, and this week he's done it multiple days. But, you know, what we're talking about now just gives readers and listeners a flavor of what we think of the teams, because there's a decent chance that half or two-thirds of these matchups will never occur. But the seedings might be somewhat similar.
Okay. And I want to say, and we'll move on a little bit to the World Baseball Classic and actually a little bit of MLB. The last 10, I mean, you did such a great job on the Coach of the Year. Here are your last 10 AP Coach of the Years in college basketball. 03, Tubby Smith. 04 was the Phil Martelli year when he got into it with Billy Packer. That was kind of humorous. Were you a Billy Packer fan?
Not really.
As a broadcaster?
Not really.
I liked him better than Vitale. I think back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
I was on the East Coast for a couple of years during the 1980s, and virtually every ACC game, and this is when they only had 8 teams in the conference, or I think 9 by this point, was on local TV. And it was Mike Patrick and Billy Packer, and it was great. I wasn't a huge – well, I kind of liked North Carolina at the time. Joe Wolf, who at the time was the greatest high school recruit that ever come out of Wisconsin – was on that team. So I kind of enjoyed watching Tar Heels for a couple of years. But I was a hate. That was when Billy Packer was a great announcer, in my opinion. But Tubby Smith also won in 05. So Tubby Smith at Kentucky.
But that's a different school.
And things didn't end up well for him there. And, I mean, the worm turned not too long after that.
Right.
After that, Roy Williams, North Carolina, 07, Tony Bennett, then Washington State, now Virginia. 08, Keno Davis, Drake. 09, Bill Self, Kansas. Boeheim, Syracuse, and 10, Mike Bray, Notre Dame. 11, and last year, Frank Case, Missouri. So... they kind of
you know what, Kurt? I'm glad you read that because I want to make a point. Because if you look in the comment section debate in the article we had, there's been this overarching theme between Jared Morris, John Washburn, and myself about this the idea of Coach of the Year versus Coach of the Season versus Recruiter of the Year. And almost everyone you named there was exactly, as I've discussed, someone who exceeded expectations. There was guys from Drake and other small schools, and even Missouri last year. They're not the guy who winds up winning the national title or the guy who's the number one overall seed. So Bo Ryan, for example, deserved Big Ten Coach of the Year, and I apologize for leaving him off my list.
Right.
But Tom Crean, and I'm pointing to Tom Crean, I know we're on an IU assembly call telecast, is not Coach of the Year. What he's done in Indiana the last 4 or 5 years is remarkable, and maybe he deserves a 4 or 5 year award. He's a great recruiter. He's probably a very good motivator. As an in-game coach, you know, people that watch him closely that aren't IU fans, you know, some of them, like John and others, say he's not the greatest in-game coach, and they've lost a lot of games late, perhaps because of coaching decisions. But Tom Crean does not get Coach of the Year when you're ranked number one preseason, you're picked to win the Big Ten, you've got 4 or 5 All-Americans, and you basically do just that. You meet expectations. And in some ways, 6 losses, including quite a few lately, maybe he didn't meet expectations. I mean, he'll probably get a 1 seed, but they lost to Butler, they lost to Illinois, they lost at home to Wisconsin, they lost at Minnesota. You know, they weren't losing to the best teams in the country, but they did win at East Lansing, at Ann Arbor, and at Columbus. So, great job, but he's not Coach of the Year, and he's not on my radar. And I'm sorry if that, I'm not biased against Tom Crean. He seems like a very nice guy, a good family man, a good brother-in-law, but he's not Coach of the Year, and he's not even in my top 15, and I'll leave it at that.
Tom Crean played his cards right taking the Indiana. It was the right job at the right time, and he left Marquette for Indiana when they were rock bottom. It wasn't like he had to be the man who succeeded Bob Knight. He succeeded Calvin Sampson, who, as he told a Michigan assistant coach who worked under Calvin Sampson, that he ran into the ground with recruiting violations. So Crean took it for a couple of it. I mean, IU was uncharacteristically on the bottom of the Big Ten, and now he's got them back up, and he'll be in the mix for Coach of the Year. The other thing, and it runs the gamut, you see some big names on there. You see Roy Williams.
But I wonder where they were. I don't think any of those guys were ranked number one preseason. I don't think they are. It's like the same reason that people like Joe Torre and Phil Jackson rarely won Coach of the Year.
You see it in all sports. Phil Belichick will not win NFL Coach of the Year again. But somebody on a team that was 7-9 or 8-8, and you know, trying to think off the top, there weren't too many surprises in the NFL this year. Like, you know, Pete Carroll might get consideration because Seattle wasn't, or John Fox with the Broncos, they weren't as good the year before, so they get more consideration, whatever the support for Coach of the Year. Now, Tony Bennett, who was with his dad at Wazoo, he was able to parlay that into a job in the ACC. Now, we got a coach here in Milwaukee, at Wisconsin-Milwaukee, and just 2 years ago, UWM was playing for the Horizon League Championship. They actually won the regular season. Yes, we had Butler at home at the U.S. Cellular Center. And even last year, the Panthers weren't bad, and the coach, Rob Jeter, he was in the mix for the University of Nebraska, which Nebraska isn't a basketball power, but they're Big Ten now. It would have been a nice job to get.
Yeah.
While the bottom fell out at UWM for a number of reasons, they've been through about 3-4 athletic directors. They had an interim athletic director, Andy Geiger, who, and you go to the UWM site and you put up Andy Geiger's mugshot, and he's got the Ohio State stuff in the background. So, yeah, he did great things at Ohio State and Maryland and Stanford before that. But he's like an interim athletic director. They were hired, and among other things, they decided to move their home games from downtown Milwaukee to the gym on campus. So they went 7-22 this year, and all of a sudden, Rob Jeter's, you know, he's going to be lucky to keep the job that he's got now. So when you see some of these coaches from some of the smaller schools have a great year and then jump at the first opportunity, in a lot of cases, you can't blame them. Bruce Pearl took Milwaukee to the Sweet 16 one year, and the round of 30, Sweet 16 and round of 32. And then he didn't even let the ink dry on the second round loss, and he took the Tennessee job. So
you mentioned Keno Davis, and I remember Keno Davis because I was a big Butler fan the year that Drake came into Butler for the Bracket Buster, and the only time I ever saw Butler lose a home game was to Drake, and he was 28-5 that year, and as I recall, in the first round loss on a buzzer beater to I think Western Kentucky. And then he jumped to Providence, and I had forgotten that he totally flopped to Providence. He was 46-50. He finished near the bottom all 3 years, and now is at Central Michigan and was 9-14 this year. Well, at least that's what Wikipedia's last update was. I could probably get a total result on that. But so sometimes they jump, and then they fail.
From Drake to Central Michigan.
Well, from Drake to Providence, and then Central Michigan, where he finished 11-20. So his record is 56-71 since he left Drake. Not a lot, not very good. He may have some money in the bank now, or a lot of money, but maybe he should have stayed in Des Moines.
Yeah, I mean, so did Bruce Pearl, but I don't know. I mean, what's the right Rob Jeter's Wisconsin guy? His dad was a great Green Bay Packers player. So it's you know, Milwaukee's been a good job for him, but sometimes you got to strike when the coal's hot. We've been talking college basketball for the last little over an hour. I'm Kirk Crawley. He's Ari Kaufman on the other side of the glass. It's just past 7:30 here in the Central Time Zone, 8:30 out east, 5:30 up and down the West Coast. Which parking lot are you on? But we've got, I don't know how long you'd like to stay on, Ari, but we've got a 2-hour window. Want to talk some World Baseball Classic and the upcoming baseball season?
Yeah, absolutely. That'd be great. We can do that for, you know, half an hour or so.
Okay. Right now, I'm catching the, as we speak, Puerto Rico is playing Italy. And I hate to inform you, this is the only, it's not the top, Italy's baseball team's not the top story in Rome today.
I don't think Italy's baseball team is even one of the top 10 stories in Rome or Italy.
I don't know, but anyway, I got to look up who's playing, who's the starting pitchers in this game. It's Corliss in the fifth. So they're top five at Marlins Stadium, and they are scoreless. Looks like they're actually the bases were loaded, and this is going to be a bases clearing double. And it's a 3-run double. Italy has taken a 3-0 lead.
Yeah,
and
there's no team that's been more impressive.
I believe that was Rizzo, that number 44 who hit that. So
there's two ways to look at Italy, Kurt.
What's that?
Yeah, well, there's two ways to look at Italy's team. One is to say they've overachieved because, you know, they're the only European team. Well, the Netherlands has a team, but all those guys, most of them are from the islands. So I don't know that I consider Netherlands actually, you know, Holland as we think of it. But Italy, my gosh, I mean, they obviously advanced to the second round because they were able to they lost to the U.S., but they mauled Canada and beat Mexico as well. And then yesterday they really could have and should have beaten the Dominican Republic, who probably one of the two or three best teams in the tournament. And then you're telling me, I'm not watching, that they're now up 3-0 on Puerto Rico, who's a very good team, who knocked out Venezuela. But then you think to yourself, and this is still an impressive story, but Anthony Rizzo sitting third for them, right? And this guy, you know, he's as Italian as you know, I mean, as I am Russian. I mean, he's he's born in Fort Lauderdale, and he plays for the Cubs, and he's as American as you or I. But that's how it goes. Mike Piazza's coaching the team, and they've, you know, about half their roster at least are guys that may never have stepped foot in the country of Italy.
Right.
And a lot of minor leaguers, so you got to be impressed that way. But they do have Anthony Rizzo, and I'm trying to remember, they have someone else on their team that's a very well-known major leaguer. His name escapes me. But, you know, no, Nick Punto is the other guy I'm thinking of, and Chris Norfia. So their top three hitters are major leaguers. But, yeah, the fact that they can hang with these good Latin American teams or the U.S. is very impressive.
Right. I mean, this is an elimination game. Puerto Rico is done if they lose this game. The good thing about the second round is it's not round robin. It's not a three-way tiebreaker, run differential. You know, you can work that out in soccer. I mean, the World Cup does that or other soccer competitions, but in baseball, it's only a matter of time before you have fireworks break out over something like that, and that's exactly what happened between Canada and Mexico over the weekend. And the second best line of the weekend next to the Tom Crane line was Canada coach Larry Walker saying, trying to hold back Adrian Gonzalez and saying that he saw Satan. He saw Satan in his eyes.
Well, that was interesting, that little skirmish they had. No doubt about it, out in Phoenix.
So a little bit more, and like, for example, if you're a Milwaukee Brewers fan, and let's see, off the top of my head, Tyler Green, John Axford, I may be missing someone else off the Canadian team, and you have Yovani Gallardo off the Mexico team. It's like, you don't want these guys tingly paired off somewhere. And it's like most of the principles involved were, it kind of reminded me of a hockey fight. It's a no-name. You know, in hockey, you have your fourth line enforcers that go out and do the fighting when the star player gets roughed up. And that's kind of what happened in that case. A few other observations, and bless Canada. I mean, they played their hearts out against the U.S. in the final. I thought they had a legitimate chance of winning. You know, finally the U.S. Broke it open, Adam Jones late, but still, I think Joe Mauer said after the game that he had to personally win that game because he would have never heard the end of it from
Minnesota.
Morneau.
Oh, Morneau, yeah.
In the Twins clubhouse for the year. So, yeah, it's, you know, they're interesting angles. It's different. I kind of, what I love about the MLB network is you have spring training games almost nonstop. In fact, they had a Padres-Giants game that they aired at 11 p.m., so like I'm nodding off here at 1:30. Here's the Giants. Giants and the Padres fell on. But one dynamic about the World Baseball Classic is the pitch limits, because obviously in the spring they don't want pitchers, you know, throwing 120 pitches. So it was 65 pitches for the first round. It's 80 pitches for round two, and then for the semifinals and finals, it will be 95. And what you end up seeing, it's kind of like what you saw out of the Colorado Rockies last year, where they experimented with limited pitch counts and having a starter go four innings, and then having a number two come in the pitch innings 5, 6, and 7 to set it up for the late inning relievers. I'm wondering if we're going to be seeing more of that in it's an outside-the-box theory, but I'm wondering if you guys see more of this going forward in Major League Baseball, and if so, they have to rethink the guidelines for a pitcher being credited with a win, because how it is now, a starting pitcher has to go 5 innings. So if a starter goes 4 2/3 innings, it doesn't matter if his team's up 13-3. If he doesn't pitch 5 innings, he doesn't get the win. Which is kind of a quirky rule. I've always thought if somebody pitched 4 2/3 innings and you have 4 relievers after that pitch an inning, and you're going to give it to whoever pitched the 5th or the 6th, or it's like a official scores call after that. Who, quote, was ever the most effective? And any other observations? I think, did Cuba lose a game in that?
Well, Cuba got eliminated by the Kingdom of the Netherlands, as they're known. So, yeah, they lost, 7-6 Monday night to the Netherlands, and probably one of the bigger upsets in the tournament, because the Netherlands and Japan have advanced to the finals, the final four, if you will, out in San Francisco, but most people figured it would be Japan and Cuba. And I'll tell you what, of course, the biggest game coming up will be the U.S. and Dominican Republic tomorrow, and probably be a 50-50 crowd. I think last night there were more American fans than Puerto Rican fans, but I think you'll see about a 50-50 crowd down in Miami tomorrow night. The U.S., and I didn't start following it until, I followed it since the beginning, but I didn't follow any of the hype building up to it, so I didn't really know who was on the U.S. team necessarily. I kept hearing people backing out, and obviously there's no David Price.
You look at the product on the field, and, I think that team would win some games. It's a lot of gold gloves.
I think that's the strength. The strength is their defense and their hitting. The U.S. has scored, after their loss to Mexico, the U.S. has scored, they had 7 last night, and before that they had 9 against Canada and 6 against Italy. So that's 22 runs in the last 3 games. It's their pitching that concerns me, at least their starting pitching, because Gio Gonzalez was great last night. He's their best pitcher, clearly. But the other starters, R.A. Dickey, who, we don't know if he's a one-year wonder or not. He's an older guy. But the knuckleball can be tricky. Ryan Vogelsong, another guy who had a career year last year, who pitched mediocre against Italy on Saturday night. And Derek Holland, anyone who says the U.S., should automatically win because they've got the best players in their team, Derek Holland's a bottom half starter for the Texas Rangers. And he's, supposedly one of the 4 best pitchers in the country in terms of at least who signed up for the World Baseball Classic. So, that'll be interesting to see what happens with the U.S. because they've got the lineup. When John Carlos Stanton's hitting 8th, you've got a lot of hitters. And I expect them to, I guess what happens? They lose to the DR, then they wind up playing the winner of this game.
They're going to be playing, I think they would play Italy tomorrow night.
They play the winner of tonight's game on Friday night in a elimination type game. So they've got a good chance to advance, the U.S. They still do. Winning last night gave them a really good chance. But if they do advance, when they get to San Francisco and they have the DR Japan and the Netherlands, it's anyone's guess at that point.
Well, we'll see. I'm wondering how much the interest will go up because I don't think they've been in the final.
They haven't.
In either of the previous 2 editions. We'll see how much buzz the U.S. team gets. David Wright has been having a huge World Baseball Classic, and I don't know if you're aware of the story. He took up with a veteran. And I guess he overheard him heckling some, like New York people always do, but he's struck up a friendship with them. I think they've swapped, David Wright has swapped some of his baseball gear for one of the soldiers' medals. And if you have to catch that story on the MLB Network or elsewhere, it's definitely worth a watch. So,
yes, it is.
I know. But, anyways, I've got the projected one-loss records. I think we'll close with this. I got the projected one-loss records for, and I'm going to do my annual article next week predicting the one-loss records of, it's kind of tricky because I always got to put everyone's one-loss records down and then make sure that it all adds up to 500 in the end, if you know what I mean.
That is tough. That is tough to do. It's good that you do it that way, though.
I did last year predict the exact one-loss record for the Milwaukee Brewers, and I think it was 83-79. And I had the Green Bay Packers at 11-5 in my football edition, and I got both of them right. So I know what's going to go down with the teams around my neck of the woods. But let's start from the bottom. We've got the Astros at 59.5. Over or under?
You know, I'm going to say over just because I like their new uniforms and they're in the on the other hand, they are in the AL West, which is a lot tougher than the NL Central. So I still say over because I think that means they'd have to lose 103 games. They can win 62.
Yeah, 60 and 102, yeah, would be an over on that. I've seen the spring training versions of those uniforms once, and I would kind of disappointed not to see a rainbow look on.
Well, can't get picky here. I think they're pretty nifty.
No, I love the set. Between the Astros rainbow and the mix and match black and gold the Pirates had, that was and you had the White Sox, and they don't even bring that back for a throwback game. If you remember those, the pajama, and they wore shorts one day.
Yeah, you're definitely showing that you're a child of the 70s right now with your interest in those uniforms, right?
And you remember how shorts were in the 70s and 80s, period.
True.
Yeah,
that was not
a good look. We have the Twins. Remember when the Twins were the little team that kind of perennially, Ron Gardenhire, he was your annual manager of the year candidate. But we got the Twins at 64.5.
Yeah, we've got a couple of Twins fans that write for us, Mr. Drew Lang and Amanda Lawson, so I won't upset them by saying that the Twins are going to lose 100 games. So I definitely think they can win more than 64, especially in a division that includes the Royals and the Indians. So,
I love Miller Park, but I got to check out Target Field last year, and I was blown away. And so much so, I am going to do my darndest to get back up there this year. Hopefully catch a couple games this time. But, I don't realize how huge downtown Minneapolis is until you look out past the right field wall and, 55-60-story skyscrapers.
Yeah, it's the principal city of that region, no doubt about it. That's Twins territory, they call it up there, and it's a big downtown, big city, and big region.
And it's not – everyone was telling you that a pitcher's park, well, Joe Mauer sure can't hit a home run there, but, I was seeing Trevor Plouffe and a few other guys. On the right day, the ball flies out of that place. Don't do a thing with the dimensions there. I think it's a wonderful part. The Miami Marlins, 64.5. I'm going under.
Yeah, it's again, you talk about two teams that have brand new ballparks, essentially, that the Twins have drew a little less, I'm sure, last year, but they'll still draw all right, but it's unfortunate that they moved into their park. They had one playoff season there. And then, of course, the Marlins build what looks like a beautiful ballpark, and I hope to get down there at some point. I have my in-laws down in that area. But, yeah, that's a tragedy, a sports tragedy, what's going on down there, and I think they'll be under that number you mentioned.
It's going to be like the Oakland Coliseum in the late 1970s. Remember when they drew like 3,000 a game? I wouldn't be surprised if the Marlins' attendance falls that far. We have Colorado at 71.5. The Rockies get so up and down from one year to the next. We could be talking in September, and they'll be in the thick of the NL West. I never sleep on the Rockies. Obviously, they got to find some pitchers, but I'm going to go slightly over.
Yeah, I would also, because I don't think the Padres and Diamondbacks are that good. I'm always looking at the divisions because of the so-called unbalanced schedule. And, you know, they've got to have 35, 40 games against those two teams. So I, although the Giants and Dodgers are very good, I would think they'll win more than that. Because, you know, they're gonna win close to half their games at home, I have to assume. So are they really going to go win fewer than 30 games on the road? Probably not.
Exactly. Yeah, no, never. Remember, I think it was 07. Drove in like 40 runs in the month of September.
And that was the year they beat Trevor Hoffman. It was the Matt Holliday try where he still hasn't touched the plate.
It was so funny. We were both at that penultimate game 161 that year when Tony Gwynn hit the game-winning game-tying triple. And you were up in the nosebleeds. I was actually down the right field line, I suppose, for a good seat for that. But that was kind of amazing. It was so ironic that Tony Gwynn just put a, you know, everyone talks about Hoffman blowing game 163. Well, how about Tony Gwynn in game 161?
Well, the irony was that Trevor Hoffman was playing for the Brewers a couple seasons later, and Tony Gwynn was playing for the Padres. They actually kind of reversed teams.
The business of baseball is a strange game. The Chicago Cubs, we have at 72. I think they may win this year.
The problem for the Cubs is that they don't have the Astros in the division anymore. And without the Astros, the NL Central is not that bad because, you know, the Reds,
right.
Cardinals, and that will be good. And the Brewers will be fine. They may not be one of the two best teams, but and the Pirates are going to keep improving. So I'm going to go under. As much as I don't like to rag on the Cubs, I don't think they can win that many games.
Yeah, and, you know, I got the aforementioned Anthony Rizzo. I think he's, you know, for some reason he didn't click. It's amazing how guys are in the Padres system and they can't hit it out of the infield at Petco Park and they go somewhere else and all of a sudden they figure it out. But I got the Mets at 74. I know you're a huge Mets fan.
I am?
Oh, yeah.
I like him more than the Yankees. The Mets. I think they're going to win more than 74. And again, I'm just going by the fact that they had a decent year last year until the final, I don't know, 6 weeks. And I think that they're better than the Marlins. And I don't think the Phillies are that great either. Not to mention, of course, we don't know if the Nationals will be as good as last year, though I assume they will be very good. And the Braves, we don't know if they'll be great, but they'll be good. And the Mets will win more than, was it 74?
Yes.
Yeah, they'll win more than 74. Not much more, but 75, 76, 77.
Well, yeah, you know what? There's the Marlins. You do have the Marlins to beat up on, but I might go under. I mean, the Phillies still aren't going to be bad. The Braves and the Mets. I would go low 70s on the Mets. The Padres, 74.5. Where do you go on the Padres?
It's really
my
hard.
Padres.
You know, my heart says more.
My Padres.
Yeah, my Padres, and Hacksaw is going to be mad about the attendance like he is with the Chargers. I think the Padres won 76 last year, if memory serves. So let's go with over 74 because I think that they're slowly improving.
Hacksaw had a message for all the Padre fans who didn't get the new Fox Sports channel and was unable to pick up Padres games last year. He goes, we got the games on the radio. Why do you all watch TV?
Well, if Jerry Coleman's still doing the games, then the radio's good. I'll tell you, Jerry Coleman's a legend. World War II veteran, guy that's approaching 90, you know.
That's amazing. And Ted Leitner has to be getting up there, too.
Ted Leitner, he probably is. He's been around there for 30, 35 years.
Yeah.
I'm guessing he's about 70, would be my guess.
Yeah, he's I was watching, I had borrowed Aldo's History of the San Diego Chargers tape and the CD and heard some of the play-by-play calls over the years, and you hear it Leitner on a couple of them. It's like, it's kind of, or when Ryan Leaf was that quarterback, it kind of brought back memories. Got the Mariners at 70, who picked it up towards the end of last year, 76.
They did.
Well, actually, I got to say for the Padres, I'm going to go, I got to go under. I hate to say it, I got to go under. Mariners, 76.5.
Well, you know, I'm doing this without checking what these teams won last year, but I'm guessing the Mariners won around that or maybe a little less
and
last
year. The Mariners
year.
Picked it up late in the year. I think
they
were
they did.
500.
Right, and last year, they were playing the A's, Angels, and Rangers in that division, who were all playoff-level teams. So
right.
That's impressive, and they'll have the Astros there, so I'll go over.
Okay. You know what? I'm going to take a leap of faith. I'm going to say over with the M's. Now, whatever sportsbook did this did these projections, this shocks me. They got the Orioles at 76.5.
That's
maybe they
strange.
Don't repeat last year. I think they win more than that.
I think they do. I think they won about 93 last year. But obviously, I don't think most people think they'll win that number again. But, boy, you're talking about, a 15- to 20-game drop-off. Even if they lost most of those one-run games they won last year, they're still going to win 80 to 85. So I have to go over that number for sure, even though the AL East is very good.
Yeah, I concur with you. I'll go, 500 on the O's. One of your other teams, you got Cleveland at 77.5. Weak division.
How many? 77.5. Boy, they only won, and I know the Indians total, because I remember. They only won 68 last year. Now, granted, they had a horrible collapse. They were in first place by the end of July. But, I don't know. That's a lot of respect for an improved team with Nick Swisher and some of the pitching additions. But how much? Say it again, 77?
77.5.
Oh, boy. Yeah, these odds makers are smart. I'd put them right around that number, so my heart will just say over, but I can certainly see them winning 75 also.
Yeah, I'm going to go under. You always like to see more on the corner of Carnegie and Ontario. But as Tom Hamilton would say, I'll put them a few games under. I got Pittsburgh at 79.
I would like to recall, I don't know if you have it in front of you, I think they wound up winning about 79 last year. They fell just short of 80. So,
right.
Look, I'm going to go over. I think they're an improving team. I don't think that they made too many changes for the positive or negative from last year. I think they're, a slightly above average team, but I think they'll win. I think they'll crack 80 this year, maybe go over 500 for the first time in two decades. So, over.
You know what? I'm going to make a spoiler here. I'm going to make a couple of bold playoff picks. I think the Pirates sneak into the National League playoffs this year. And I also got my American League surprise. The Royals are at 79.
Yeah, and that's a team that I follow a little closer than I did before I moved out to Nebraska. The Royals made the biggest trade in the offseason, at least the most interesting one, because they basically have been a team that has had bats for a couple of years now and no pitching, and now they've got they gave up their number one prospect and one of the top prospects in the baseball world in Will Myers, and a good pitching prospect in Jake Odorizzi, and they basically got James Shields and Wade Miller. So if Shields pitches well, they've got Jeremy Guthrie, who pitched well last year, actually, once he got traded. They got Urban Santana. They've still got Luke Hochaver. And they've got a division that's arguably the worst in baseball.
If Hochaver can, if he can turn it on, and it's like we're waiting for Homer Bailey for several years, and suddenly the ball came on with him. And, I think it happened, if it were to happen to Hochaver, I think the Royals are going to be in it. I think they're
going to
get a wild card.
Well, with the expanded playoffs, they have a better chance. I'll say that the Royals will win more than 79.
79.
Yeah, it's a big number. I mean, look, they haven't won 79 in the other year anywhere close to that. So it's a big number, But I'll say they'll do that. I'll say they'll do it.
Yeah, 79 seems to be a good year for the Royals. I got the Brewers at 79.5. I also got the Red Sox at 79.5.
Boy, what a sign of the times. The Red Sox and the Pirates are forecast to win the same amount of games. I think that's fantastic. That is amazing. I know the Red Sox finished close to last year in the division. I think they probably did finish in last. And I don't even know if they won 70 last year. So I don't think they'll win 79. They're certainly a little better, and they won't have the injuries maybe. I'll say under for the Red Sox. And the Brewers, boy, what did they win last year, 83?
83.
And so 79? Yeah, I think they can finish 500. Sure, I'll say over.
Yeah, that's about where I'm thinking of the Brewers right now. I look out for Mark Rastrada as a number two. I think that Jerry's curled on Mike Fiers. He didn't go big on free agency. They're going to take a look at a few people, Willie Peralta, a few others. Anyway, we'll see how it goes. Doug Melvin's being patient with it this time around. He's not breaking out $10 million a year for Jeff Suppan or even Sean Markham anymore. So, if the team's in the race, they'll make a move for someone. They'll take a rental on someone. And so, I might go with the Brewers about 81, 82. And also, I'm going to put the Red Sox slightly better. Clay Buchholz, John Lester, if they can rebound, that would be huge for Boston. These odds, they have all five AL East teams 10 games apart. So, and you can make a case literally for anyone in that division winning this year. It's no longer Yankees Red Sox. They'll be out there baseball 8 times, but it's anyone's division. The White Sox, 80.5. Now, Jared Morris was not even high on the White Sox last year, and they overachieved for a while.
Yeah, the White Sox overachieved last year and then faded like they've done in the past. How much was it, 80.5, you said?
Yes.
I think they can do that.
500.
Yeah, I think they can do that. I mean, again, you look at who else is in the division. There's probably three teams there that they're better than, certainly two, maybe three if you count Kansas City. So, yeah, they should be able to win 81 games.
I'll probably go under. I see some questions. Can Jake Peavy stay healthy? He stayed healthy last year. Their closer was a little shaky last year. There's a couple, and I'm still waiting for Gordon Beckham to turn it on. There's a few players on that team, have been very nondescript. I put them for the upper 70s, and it could go either way. But at 81.5, we got the Diamondbacks and the almighty Philadelphia Phillies.
Yeah, and look, there's the Phillies, just like the Red Sox, and we'll get to the Yankees later. No longer the kings of the NL or even Major League Baseball. We know about their great first baseman, who will certainly be an MVP candidate.
I think getting updates. I know he went yard twice in the first week of spring training.
Oh, he's the greatest power hitter of our generation. I think he should be in Cooperstown. I think they should let him in early, frankly, because you think about what he's done for the sport and Subway commercials. It's just and Boys and Girls Club. I mean, remarkable.
I'm expecting 53 home runs, 146 RBI. I mean,
no, I think you're lowballing him.
Year, he's going to turn it.
Because he's going to get better. He's going to get better with age and coming off injuries. Everyone does. That gets better with age and injuries. So.
He's not going to hit 219 again.
I don't think. I don't know that he'll hit 250 though. He's not going to hit 280. I don't think. What was the number for the Philadelphia Phillies?
81.5. And Roy Halladay is. He was.
Yeah, he's very. Older.
He says the elbow's fine, but he got wrecked. I know it's only spring training. I know it's only grapefruit league play, but he got roughed up a little bit.
Yeah, well, they'll win 81.5 or more because they were great at the end of last season. They made a push to the playoffs, and I think they finished right around 500. So I think that's a pretty good bet they're going to win it more than 81.5. And the Diamondbacks, boy, that's tough because I think of them as a 500 team. I'm going to go below 81,
yeah.
though. I seem to be low in the Diamondbacks this year. And last year they came down early.
I think I heard some injury news on Wade Miley, who came on last year, one of their young pitchers. Hopefully not too serious, but I think I ran across something that he was hurting a little bit. The defending AL West champions, the Oakland A's, are at 83.
I wonder what they were at last year, you know?
It had to have been in the night. I'm trying to pull up last year's standings.
No, I don't mean their standings. I mean what they were forecast to win last year. That's what I'm wondering.
Oh, it had to have been about – remember they played the Mariners in those first two games in the Tokyo Dome. And those going nowhere. You have Cepedes, the Cuban guy –
they're not going to win 95 games or whatever again. But sorry, remind me of the number you mentioned.
83.
Yeah, they'll win more than 83. I think they're still a good team.
I think they're going to be down this year. I'm going to put them below 83.
Yeah.
Just my gut feeling on that. I have the Cardinals at. They seem to wear the snake oil every fall. They caught that break in the wild card game in Atlanta, and then I thought for the life of me they were going to finish off the San Francisco Giants and go back to the World Series. And I like Nick Matheny. I have the Cardinals for 85.5.
Chris Carpenter's out. He may be done for his career.
Yeah,
but they've got Wainwright. They always overachieve. It seems like I think they must have won about 88 last year. I'm going to go that they'll win more than 85.5, and I think they very well could win the division. But Cincinnati's probably a little better.
I'm going to trend above it. I don't see them being 500 or anything. Very quick, we got 18 minutes. The following at 86. The defending world champion Giants are at 86. The Braves are at 86. The Rays are at 86.
Oof. The Giants fell back to earth in 2011 after winning the World Series, so I'm going to say they will again. And because I've been going over with everyone else, I think I need to go under with a few because otherwise I'll have too many wins.
Right.
I'll go over with the Braves, who I think are due to have another good year. And, sorry, what was the third team?
Tampa Bay.
I'm gonna go under with Tampa Bay. Strong division. I'm going to go under with them.
Yeah, I agree. I would go under with T-Bay. The Braves, I never disrespect. The team I never disrespect. I'm going to go over with the Braves. I'm going to go over with the Giants, too. The aforementioned AL East, the Yankees and the Jays are both at 86.5.
Well, I'm guessing that's the lowest number the Yankees have seen in a long time, and I don't know if that's going to change with Teixeira and Granderson out and the team getting older and older. But on the other hand, 86 is, they win 90 to 95 every year. So as much as I'd like to say the Yankees are going to, finish last or only win 80 games, 86 is about where I probably have them. So let's just say under because of that little half you threw in there, but the Yankees are certainly not what they were even last year and certainly not a few years ago.
I'm going to go over only because no one is going to run away with the division, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And if the Yankees are in it, the Yankees will do what the Yankees like to do, and that's throw another $50 million to repair whatever holes they have in their lineup or their pitching staff.
Right. Well, yeah, there's no doubt about that.
They're not going to ever accept the rebuilding year, which is the prior year. In my opinion, I think they should bite the bullet, get some draft picks, and then, then sign some people.
I agree.
The Yankees will never learn, and people will keep on paying, $60, $70 to set up in the upper deck of Yankee Stadium.
Right. They're going to draw, just like the Cubs always draw. Yeah.
Right. The Blue Jays, I'm not buying the Blue Jays right now. Brett Lowry, he tends to get hurt. I don't want to put the injury-prone label on him yet. And R.A. Dickey, you know what? Here's my opinion on the knuckleball. The knuckleball can be fantastic, and the knuckleball can turn on you the following year. Look at Tim Wakefield's career. It lasted forever, but he would be great 1 year and absolutely horrible the next. So I think R.A. Dickey said come down to earth this year. So I'm going to go a little under with the Blue Jays. Now, I'm trying to think Doug Drabek's kid. I think he's coming off of Tommy John. He won't be back till midseason. I would have Kyle Drabek, I would have to believe.
I think the Blue Jays are, you know, as of right now, I think people would be comparing them to last year's Marlins type, but it's a fair, decent analogy. You know, it's a very good division. I could see them and the Rays and Yankees and Orioles all winning 85 to 87. So I'm going to say over, just because 86.5. Yeah. Someone's going to win close to 90, I think.
They had a ton of injuries from about June 1st on last year.
They have a very good team before this year. So I'll go over, but certainly I'm surprised if they win 84.
And another one who has to come back. Will he come back to what he was 2-3 years ago? I'm not expecting 50 home runs from him again, but I have the Rangers at 80. We've got six more to go, actually. We've got the Rangers at 87.
Well, the Rangers choked.
How many players can that team lose?
What's that?
I mean, how many players can the Rangers lose to arch rivals, mind you?
Yeah.
I'm kind of down on Texas right now.
But they still got a very good team, and frankly, they were the best team in baseball until about mid-September, maybe even until the last week of the season last year. And I, you know, think they won mid-90s, so I'm going to go over. But obviously, there's another team in that division that's probably better than they are, which we'll get to them
right
in a minute.
I'm kind of looking at the top prospects. There's a shortstop for Texas. I'm trying to think of his name.
Oh, yeah, Jared and I saw him play. Jerickson Profar.
So that's the guy, if you're in fantasy baseball, do not wait till the last round. He's going high up on draft boards. Cincinnati, 88.5.
I'd like to know what they won last year. I think they won like 97 or 98. So I'm going to go over. They're a good team. They've got a manager that I question a lot, but talent eventually wins out. They choked in the playoffs, but yeah, they'll win more than 88.
No, I'm going to go over too. And if you're in the last round of fantasy baseball, don't sleep on Billy Hamilton. You don't know when he'll get a call up. Don't put him on the waiver wire and see him get picked. Get the call the following week, but in September you could be talking about one of the biggest base stealing threats in quite some time. Of course, you can't steal first base, but you know what he steal 150 in the minors last year.
And yeah, it was something.
Have you gotten a chance to see him play in your minor league travels?
No, because I've been out of that region for a couple of years now. So
okay.
No, I don't believe that I have.
Okay. Angels, 89.5.
It's interesting. There's always 8 or 10 teams every year that win 90 games or more. And obviously, we're getting toward the end here, and we haven't had any team forecasted to win 90. So, yeah, I think the Angels will win 90. Are they the best team in baseball? Most people say they are. They certainly have a great lineup. They've got three of the five best players in baseball, maybe, and Mike Trumbo being a fourth. But I do wonder about their pitching because they lost Greinke, and he had his own issues, but outside of Jared Weaver and C.J. Wilson, they don't have much. They don't have a lot of pitching. So I think they'll win 90, but I certainly don't think they're, you know, heads and tails above everyone else and on the way to winning 103 games.
Yeah, no, it's going to be, you know, everyone had the Angels last year and didn't even make the playoffs, obviously. So
yeah,
Mike
Sosa did a terrible job managing last year.
Yeah. He's getting to be a little overrated. I'm even hearing people in L.A. Down on him. And finally, the final three. Pick to win 90, all three teams. Detroit, Dodgers, Nationals.
Detroit's going to win 90, even though I don't think they won you know, that many more than 90 last year, but because of the division, and then they've got a very good team, and, you know, even though they're some people say they're a three-man team, they're a good team. They have more than Verlander, Cabrera, and Fielder, so they'll win more than 90.
They're built for the playoffs.
What's
that? I heard the Tigers are built for the playoffs. When they were playing Cleveland, Tom Hamblin said they may not be winning a lot of games, but if they win the division, look out for them in the playoffs with Verlander and a couple others. They're built for the short series. They're built for the days off, and sure enough, Detroit won the American League. And
Tom Hamilton's a wise man. He's a wise man, Tom Hamilton. And they've always got Fister and Scherzer and Sanchez. They always pitch well in the playoffs. And, of course, you just need a couple hits from your big guys, and then they signed. Right. They have Torii Hunter now. So, yeah, they're a very good team. They'll win 90 games. And the Nationals and the Dodgers, you see, mentioned, right?
Yes.
Well, the Nationals may, in fact, be the best team in baseball. God, they went close to 100 last year. And Strasburg, Gio Gonzalez, Zimmerman, Dan Heron.
Yeah, the trading wheels are off the USS Strasburg.
Right. And, so that can only help them. And, of course, a very good lineup. I think, you know, you're going to tell me that some teams have to win 95, 96 games, or at least 93. There'll be one.
The organization got questioned for shutting down. You know, I thought middle relief would have been a good compromise. But when you have a huge lead in game five of the NLDS, then, yeah, if they bring the second guesses out, it's not like the football team there. When you had the opposite situation, when you have a guy with a obviously messed up knee and an idiot coach that leaves him in despite having a good backup quarterback. We could talk about Mike Shanahan another show. Nats, how do I go above? I've got a resident Nats fan on my Facebook feed, Walt Nelson. He's already bought his tickets for the Nats at Petco, and he says it's the year of the Nats. While I think the Dodgers are going to go over 92, and we'll have the Nationals and the Dodgers in the NLCS, and I remember those two franchises playing in an NLCS way back in the day.
1981, Expos Dodgers, yeah.
And that stadium that literally resembled a toilet bowl, and I'm waiting for that thing to come. They still use it for MLS games and a few other events, and that thing's crumbling down. And could it be Blue Monday, the sequel? Just to be funny, I'm going to pick the Dodgers over the Nats and the NLCS. All heads in on Zach Greinke's next trip to the MRI machine. You know, obviously, we hope for the best for him. The American League, you know, I mean, it's really tough. I am going to go with the Angels. Hopefully they don't fall on their rear ends again. No, wait, I can't go with the Angels because it can't be a Dodgers-Angels World Series. That's not allowed. Detroit over Anaheim and the Dodgers over Washington. Tentatively, those are my ALCS, NLCS picks. And, of course, the Tigers fall in the World Series. It's going to be hard to pick the L.A. Dodgers winning it all because, you know, they're kind of like Notre Dame. Believe it or not, it's been 25 years since they've even been to the World Series when they won with Hershiser. But they're supposed to say, you know, hate them like they never left once they get there.
I was looking forward to the Nationals-Reds NLCS last year because they were the two best in the NL last year, and they both fell apart. Well, the Nationals didn't really fall apart, but the Reds did.
Only for Dusty Baker. Otherwise, I would give the Reds a chance.
I'm gonna pick the Reds because Dusty's got to get it right one of these times in the playoffs. So I'm gonna pick the Reds to represent the NL.
I think Dusty's the Marty Schottenheimer of MLB.
Yeah, well, except he keeps his job. I'm like, he's been fired. But I mean, Yeah, I'll go with the Reds, and I don't think the Tigers make it back. The Angels have got to break through to at least the playoffs, certainly, and maybe they'll get through to the World Series. Let's just go with that. It's a crapshoot once you get into October, but little Angels-Reds action, and Dusty can go back to Anaheim where he coughed up the World Series with the Giants back in 2002, and maybe enact some revenge.
That'll be a storyline. Actually, that's opening day. The Angels are in Cincinnati. Interleague play all year.
Rolling interleague play. We have a couple minutes. What are your thoughts on rolling interleague play, Kurt?
I like it. I was okay for it before, but I didn't like only four teams in the American League West.
I'm calling for Houston to move there since I was 10 years old. Well, maybe not that long ago, but since I was in high school.
You know, it was just, let's even it out, you know, interleague play. You know, I'd like to go back to 1970 and Ozzie and Harriet and have the pitchers in both leagues and have different styles of play and different umpires and different strike zones and different things. Remember, it was always the National League had the widest strike zone and Eric Grigg with, that playoff game with LeBron Hernandez. He called everything the area code.
Or that pitch landed in, like, you know, West Palm Beach and he called it a strike. Yeah.
that was one of the fun, Eric Grigg, God rest his soul, but, it was a funny guy, but,
that was the end for him.
Once they consolidated the umpires into Major League Baseball umpires, and you don't hear that anymore. Now you got the Quest Tech and all that. Some of these umpires make it today with their own agendas and their own strike zones, and now you have the TV coverage and the little box showing where the ball lands and that,
The umpires love that.
2012,
yeah.
And Eric Grigg's calling all that, and that little dot is, a mile wide of the strike zone. So, I would actually, I would like to see interleague play increase to 30 games.
You're really angry in the purist out there with that one.
Bob Costas will be very thrilled with me. He makes a trip to Milwaukee once a year so I can, do a broadcast with Uke and, for some reason, he still likes the secret sauce. The secret sauce was good when they were still at Counties Canadian, the broth sauce. But I like to see every team come in every 3 years.
Yeah, I
like to do away with the, quote, rivalry team in the other league. Brewers Twins is fun. But do we need to see Yankees Mets six times?
My Yankees and Mets fans have said they've had enough of that Yankees Mets.
Yeah.
So it's universal. It's unanimous. Let's move on from Yankees Mets six times a year. It doesn't do much for anyone.
Right. I love going to Fenway Park three times, once every 3 years, or the Red Sox coming to the National League Park every 3 years. I think it won't happen. I think it will stay at 20 or whatever it is now. If you remember one of the outside the box theories, Bud Selig, who I think has been more, at least better than the other three commissioners of the other major sports. It was kind of funny. I was when the Brewers were in the American League and they played the Cardinals in the first year of interleague play. It was like a walk-off homer, game ends bottom of the ninth, and I'm walking down from the upper concourse at County Stadium, and you hear someone, we got 90 seconds up. I saw Bud Selig, no security. Someone calls out, and he just walks to an unmarked door and goes in. But it was 1997. He was walking around with no entourage or anything. But anyway, sorry. It's been a blast. 2 hours. This isn't no clear channel nonsense. No traffic on the 10s. Just 2 hours solid of baseball and March Madness talk. I'm looking forward to doing it again.
Yeah, well, I'd just like to say thanks. It's been a pleasure. Good night, La Mesa, El Cajon, Encinitas, and Vista, Escondido, and all the cities up and down San Diego
tomorrow
County.
Night. Take a rain check, call us tomorrow night. We'll get to the out-of-town scoreboard.
And we'll be right back. Yes. All right.
Good
Thank you, Kurt.
San Diego.
All right.
Good night. Send fun.
Bye-bye. Bye.
We'll do it live.